So, first of all, thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity to share some of the preliminary work done for a couple of years with Dylan Herrera, who works at the Fundación para el Desarrollo Integral del Pacífico, a think tank focused on development issues related to Colombia's Pacific coast. So basically, as the title of the webinar suggested, what I would like to stress in this presentation and just have any definitive findings. This is a work in progress at the early stages of a research project. So basically the title, Those Who Left and Those Who Stays, Factors Path to Civilian Life, reflects a passionate, if you want, or a really puzzling question happening in Colombia, and is the fact that right now in Colombia we can see how from a same armed structure, in this case the Revolutionary Colombia's Armed Forces, the former rebel movement which recently disarmed, we can contrast the path of the path to civilian life of defectors as well as non-defectors. So first of all, so that's like the starting point, is that the research puzzle, if you want, is that Colombia provides a case study and a unique opportunity for contrasting defectors and non-defectors path to civilian life who previously belonged to the same armed structure. But the former ones left the armed group in the context of a counterinsurgency campaign, whereas the other ones remain until the signing of the peace agreement and the disarmament of the rebel group. So just to make clear the starting point, which is the research puzzle, which is absolutely fascinating. So first of all, I would like to stress a few things about being a combatant in the Colombian context in general, and more specifically, what does it mean being a combatant, sorry, in the context specifically of the FARC. So first of all, here I'm going to analyze this topic based on the work of other fellow academics from other Colombian universities, but also I will rely on former combatants' testimonies, most of them defectors, as of course of the path to civilian life of non-defectors has just started, so we don't have many elements to make an assessment of whether it worked or it didn't. So basically, for analyzing the question of being a combatant in the FARC, you have to bear in mind that it was a rebel group characterized by by a vertical structure of command. So in the case of Colombia, if you contrast the FARC with the other rebel group, the ELN has a structure more decentralized, whereas the FARC it's more vertical. It's like the equivalent of the structure of the Colombian military, but in the structure of a rebel group. So just to bear in mind that there is a top instance in the FARC, which is called the Secretariado, where you can find the top leaders of this rebel group. And they used to have a very strong, to use the military term, command and control over the rest of the rebel group. So what we have here is a rebel group which historically was one of the aspects to highlight was its strong cohesion and also the strong hold the Secretariado had on the rest of the troop. So this is important because we are talking about a rebel group which in the past had a very significant presence over the territory of Colombia, and we are not just talking about peripheral regions. We are talking about rebel fronts located nearby the capital, Bogota, where even if they could not deploy any military action, they were able symbolically to demonstrate to the political, the economic, and the social elites, we are here, with all the symbolism derived from the fact that Bogota is the capital. And also, well, they were able to coordinate all the logistics of extortions and kidnappings. So it's a very vertical, it was a very vertical structure, it was a very cohesive organization, and each of the fronts had a commander, which were like the in the middle ground between the combatants, the base, and the top leaders in the Secretariado. So one of the aspects here which is important to bear in mind is that I remember asking a former FARC combatant to defector, how is life in the FARC? Could you just please explain me what is like a day, a typical day for a combatant inside the rebel group? So he basically stressed that there were positive things, such as the fact that there was not private property, so everything was shared. But he also stressed out the fact that, and there is an academic consensus as well as in the policy world, that life in the FARC is very hard. Because, first of all, in contrast with what Paul Collier has stated about the criminalization of rebel groups, and even if the FARC heavily relied on financing through illicit drugs and criminal economies, what it's interesting is that the FARC never paid any salaries of any kind to its members. So this is one aspect where in Colombia you can find an academic consensus as well as in the policy community. The FARC didn't pay or didn't recognize any economic incentive to its combatants, to its members. So this is, as a Colombian academic, Francisco Gutierrez, has demonstrated it. This really contradicts Collier's statement about the criminal rebels. And unlike the paramilitary and self-defense groups, where you could find evidence about economic incentives in terms of salaries, as well as in terms of being able to loot communities or to loot or to take advantage of the benefits of the finance of being financed by criminal economies at the individual level. So I want to stress this because this gives you an idea or makes you think about why would somebody, in a certain way, it appeals to a motivation with no economic incentive for belonging to the armed structure. as Francisco Gutierrez, the colleague I previously quoted, demonstrated in one of his papers. So, unlike the paramilitaries, the combatants of the FARC didn't receive any economic compensation in terms of salary, and also it was a rebel group very hard on in terms of sanctioning its members when they find out they were involved in looting activities. And also, this is one important aspect to bear in mind, the FARC considers defection as a treason. Therefore, they consider that a defector's punishment is the death penalty. Actually, the FARC, as a rebel group, unlike the Colombian state, had the death penalty for defectors, because they consider it as an organization that defection was a treason, was like the highest, if you want, circumstance configurating the highest case of a treason. So just to give you an idea about the high risk choice made by defectors, because if they decided to abandon the organization, they could face the death penalty. So just to give you an idea in terms of the context. So first of all, as I mentioned it, I wanted to stress out the main theaters of the FARC as a rebel group in terms of its structure, very cohesive, vertical, a very disciplined military force with a strong enforcement, for instance, in terms of sanctioning looting activities, and with a zero tolerance towards defection. Defectors indeed were subjected to the death penalty if they were caught during the defection process. Actually, one of the former FARC defectors I had the chance to interview told me he came to Bogota. He currently lives in Bogota, which is a very big city where you could think a defector could hide and easily hide due to the anonymity of a big city. Nevertheless, he told me that former FARC combatants came to Bogota to kill him. And I also remember another testimony of a couple who defected together from the FARC, and they could only do so during the nights, because if they did so during the day, they would be easily identified by the FARC and by all the intelligence networks. So it decreases their chances of getting out of the rebel structure. So just to give you that idea, and of course the lack of economic incentives in comparison or in contrast with the paramilitary or self-defense groups in Colombia. And if you see this, it totally makes sense the different approach in terms of disarmament when you compare the peace process with the paramilitary and the self-defense with the peace process with the FARC. As with the peace process with the FARC, disarmament was the last stage, whereas with the former paramilitary and self-defense group, disarmament was the initial stage. So this gives you an idea of how, in the case of the FARC, we are really talking about combatants. Because of one of my colleagues from Externado de Colombia University, Camilo Chandia, has clearly stated, a combatant never gives up its arm. His arm, because it's his or her identity, but also it's principal mean of defense. So in contrast with the paramilitary or self-defense, where it all makes sense of having the disarmament at the initial stage of the peace process, because they were a criminal structure strongly linked with the criminal economy of the illicit drug and trafficking, heavily focused on cocaine. So just to give you that, those contextual elements. Secondly, how was, in contrast or in comparison with the rebel group, defection was perceived by the government as a way of pursuing counterinsurgency beyond military means. As you all must be aware, Colombia is presented as a very successful case of counterinsurgency, considering how the FARC evolved from a very strong rebel group to a very weak one, which was able to be military active, which was not totally defeated, but in comparison with its previous military capabilities, the FARC is a case study of counterinsurgency. So basically, what I want to stress here is the fact that for the government, defection was a way of successfully weakening the FARC without any military combatant. So if you want, here I could borrow the expression of Joseph Nye of soft power versus hard power, which is in the context of international relations, but we could also apply it in the context of counterinsurgency, where the government combined a hard power approach, military confronting the FARC, killing its highest leader, but also a soft power which was opening the door for defection. And it was very successful because the FARC started losing a considerable portion of its combatants. I will give you the exact number later. And this, in a certain way, forced the Colombian state to make an institutional arrangement for addressing the needs of former combatants, because they faced a very particular situation. They were alone, because most of them defect by themselves. However, you have cases of couples defecting together, but usually the case it was that they were individual defectors. So they were all by themselves in a context which was not familiar, as basically, I mean, the point I want to make is they didn't have any safety net, because for a combatant, the safety net, it's the rebel group. They have lost contact with their families for a long time ago. They lose combatant with their hometowns. So they lost their safety net, and actually they faced the risk of being caught by their former rebel mates, who now were trying to kill them, as they committed a treason. So, just to give you an idea of how risk defection was for the FARC combatants in the Colombian context. So, paradoxically, the FARC defector members benefited from the reintegration program established by the Colombian government after the paramilitary and the self-defense forces demobilized. So it's a very interesting case, because in these reintegration programs you have former enemies such as members of the FARC with members of the paramilitary and self-defense groups, together with members of the ELN who defected as well from their rebel organization. So basically, this reintegration process was conceived as a 6.5 years. Its duration was 6.5 years, and it was established as a comprehensive, if you want, strategy. So it consider what it was a multidimensional approach, with addressing issues such as the combatants' personal safety, their conditions of living, education, training for the job market. It comprises health issues as well. So basically, this was a very successful case of building technical capabilities in a peace build for a typically peace building situation, which is former combatants transition from war to peace, in a context where we didn't have a peace process, because this was all part of a counterinsurgency context. So that's one aspect I would like to point out. What kind of assessment could you do about this reintegration process? Well, first of all, it was undoubtedly successful in terms of weakening the rebel force. But you just can't claim success just by saying, oh, we succeed because this amount of former combatants effectively defected from the organization, because you have to and help them in this context where they don't have any safety net, and as well as they don't have any safety net, they face the risk of a death penalty. So basically what you could see is that it was very successful, as reincidence was very low compared to reincidence for in the context of jail. And also it was successful because most of the FARC members decided to take part of this reintegration approach. So basically, when the peace process with the FARC starts, you could think, wow, this is really an advantage, because Colombia has already the technical capabilities for addressing one of the most pressing issues for post-conflict societies, how to deal with former combatants. Yet, in La Habana, the FARC were very strongly opposed the idea of using this reintegration approach, because they argued that it was a way of, as I previously said, weakening the rebel group and also addressing the needs of its defectors, which basically for the FARC are traitors. So there was like a strong political opposition against using the same reintegration approach. And beyond the political argument, which if you see it from the perspective of the FARC, it makes sense. I mean, from a political point of view, it's, wait a second, this was the way you guys built all this institutional framework for addressing the question of defectors. So there's no way my combatants, non-defectors, who stay until the last day of war, are using that approach. So first of all, there is this political argument, but secondly, there is also a consideration, and I do think that it's the main point we would like to address on this research, is that do you need the same approach for a defector and a non-defector, given the fact that the non-defector remains with the organization? So, in this sense, they don't lose their safety net, because now they are part of the FARC, but not the FARC, the rebel group. They are part of the FARC, the political party, and also the different social movements associated with the FARC, the political party. Just to remind you, the political party is called the FARC, as well as the name of the former rebel group. So, first of all, do you need the same approach where, in the one case, you had one individual defector who lost its safety net, who was bearing the risk of death penalty, whereas in the case of non-defectors, they remain part of the organization, because now they are not a combatant, but they are part of the political and social base of the political party and the associated social movement. So that's one aspect to bear in mind. Also, whereas the reintegration approach was based on rebuilding an individual life project, in this case, the reincorporation, when we are in the context of non-defector, we are in the we speak of reincorporation, not reintegration. All the strategy is collective, because part of the main challenge of the reincorporation is to ensure or is to guarantee that the cohesive structure of the rebel will remain as a political party and as a social movement, because it guarantees a political and social base. So here, what is interesting to note is that whereas for the reintegration approach, the main challenge was for the combatant to leave the armed group, in the reincorporation approach, the main challenge is that he doesn't leave the FARC, but in the understanding of a FARC as the political party and a social movement. So it's quite fascinating, this contrasting view of the challenges, of the challenge faced in each case. In the first one, for the government, the challenge was, I mean, for the rebel group, the main challenge was that the combatant defected from the organization. But now the challenge is to be able to remain all its combatants, but now translate it as political base and as part of a social movement. And also, another difference is that for security reasons, the reintegration approach did not take place in the territories, but most of the combatants had to go to the cities where the reintegration process took place. Whereas for the reincorporation approach, the government, and as part of the peace process, they establish what it's called reincorporation and capacitation zones, which are in the territories. I mean, they take place in the territories, and also the approach now is not from, it's not just a unilateral offer from the state to the combatants, but they have to reach a political consensus between the institutional governmental agency, which is called the IRN, the Reincorporation and Normalization Agency, which previously was called the ACR, the agency, the Colombian Agency for Reintegration. So now everything has to be discussed. So many fear that we are making a transition from a technical institution to a more political one. As of course, there is a political context. Well, there was also a political context in the reintegration, which was the counterinsurgency. But now the political context for the FARC, at least, is to be able to insert the reincorporation in its political project of political party and a social movement. So just to bear in mind that. Now, even if what we want to demonstrate in the research is that there are evident differences which require a different approach, we also would like to stress the fact that individual combatants may face equal risks, regardless of their status of combatants or non-combatants. So here, I would like to speak of issues such as the risk of recidivism, which is very low for former combatants, because, well, we want to demonstrate that the decision to defect in a certain way explain the low rate of recidivism, because you told yourself, hey, I don't want to be part of an armed structure, I'm done here. Whereas in the reincorporation scheme and the reincorporation approach, they stay until the end of the FARC as a rebel group, but also the risk of recidivism is represented in the fact that there are many opportunities for being engaged in criminal economies. So, as I told you previously, yes, the FARC does not fall exactly in this idea of the criminal rebel established by Paul Collier, but it was a rebel group which financed itself from the criminal economies. So most of the combatants had their job was to oversee all the process related to criminal economies. So they have a very valuable know-how for other criminal structure now interested in those criminal networks, if you understand what I want to point out. So here there was the same risk for defectors, but here the challenge is to test the cohesive of the FARC without coercion, and for coercion the fact that now the FARC does not appeal to coercion within its group to enforce or to guarantee the belonging of their former combatants. So just one aspect to bear in mind. Another one relates, for instance, to aspects such as community reconciliation in terms of the fact that most of the defectors, as part of their reintegration approach, suffer from stigma, as they are still perceived as violent perpetrators. So part of the reintegration process is a social service, and they first do it anonymously, and then they tell the community, listen, you know what? They were former combatants. So you get surprising responses such as, wow, they didn't look like a rebels combatants. So in the case of the reincorporation approach, the point is that here reconciliation is in the territories directly affected by the FARC as a rebel group. So, and also we want want to demonstrate, or we would like to demonstrate as a hypothesis, the fact that even if both defectors and non-defectors are perceived by the community, may be perceived as violent perpetrators, maybe for members of the community to know that they decided to defect may ease that negative stereotype, as opposed to those combatants who decided to stay with the rebel group until the end. And also, another issue are the security concerns of the former FARC members in terms of security guarantees, which, regardless of the difference, it represents a challenge for the Colombian state. Because here, for the FARC, one of their main concerns is that as they gave up on their weapons, they face a guarantee on behalf of the state in terms of guaranteeing their security. So this is basically like the idea now of this research. Again, just to emphasize, it's a very preliminary, I mean, it's a work in progress in its preliminary stage. I will be very pleased to hear your questions, your comments, or any observation you have. Hello?
Eduardo, so I think you can unmute people by clicking on attendees. Otherwise, people yes? can ask questions and type
them.
So on the right side of the screen,
yes,
you can.
I have there should be a web, audio, and chat.
Huh, that's weird. I'm going to see if
I can take control of the screen again. I have assistance, and here, okay, I have Cameron, Creative Learning, Eduardo Echara. So
and
what should I do here?
Click on attendees on the left tab there. You should be able to, anyone who can raise their hand, and if not, I actually have a question too.
Okay, so just let me see. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, okay. Okay. So let me see. Okay, assistants can talk. So I think I make it.
Yeah, you just have to. Anyone who wants to just raise your hand if you have a question for Eduardo, or if you want to type it in the questions page, it'll pop up for us to be able to see. And while people are potentially thinking about that, I was wondering, you were talking about people had to reintegrate within the city, and I was wondering where the
yes.
stigma was worse for people, if it was worse for people in the cities and areas, especially if they weren't from those cities, or if it was worse out more in the more rural areas.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
No, of course, I'm sorry. So I was wondering if the people, when they're reintegrating, were was there any correlation with how much stigma, or if they had less stigma, if they were from the area where they were reintegrating to?
Okay, so thank you for that question, because I think that the FARC, most of its combatants come from a rural extraction. So basically, the world of the city is for them is as unfamiliar for them as the urban context is as familiar for the former combatants as vice versa. So I do think that we can have more chances of stereotypes and stigma in urban settings, where basically people in the big cities, even if they felt the consequences of the armed conflict in terms of the risk of being kidnapped, of seeing displaced person on the streets, they have never seen a combatant. So for them, it's really surprising to see how a combatant is a person like you and me. So in that sense, I do think that in rural settings, people are used to interact with the FARC. So for them, it's not going to be a big deal. All of this as a hypothesis, of course.
That's interesting. Did anyone else have any questions?
Actually, I do have a question. And can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you perfectly.
Okay, so Edward, yeah, following Caleb's question, I wanted to know how does, like, if you have any findings on how does the hiding or changing the identity work for ex-combatants in the city?
Okay. So, just could you say it again, because I didn't hear the beginning of your question very clearly.
Yeah, it's okay. Just following Caleb's question, how does changing their identity work for ex-combatants in the city?
Oh, okay. So here, one interesting thing is that for defector, there was, if you want, an identity crisis because I don't belong to the rebel group. The rebel group was my safety net, and now I am any given citizen. Whereas the term, the redefinition of identity for non-defector, in a certain way, is eased by the fact that they remain part of the FARC, but as their political base or as part of their social movement. So, I mean, there is a question of identity, of course, because for non-defectors now there is the question of how I belong to the organization, but outside the context of war. So, for instance, this will represent a challenge to maintaining the cohesive structure of the FARC without resorting to coercion, because the FARC was a very disciplined, very rough armed group within, so regarding their members, regarding their combatants. So that's an aspect that will in a certain way represent a redefinition for non-defectors. But if you want, for defectors, the redefinition is more drastic because they lost all the contact with the organization.
All right. Are there any more questions?
Any more questions, any more comments, observations?
It looks like that may be it. That was an incredibly informative presentation, and I just wanted to thank you for taking time to tell us about it and help us understand it better.
No, it was actually my pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope in the near future I'll have the chance to share with all the IPSI community the findings once we refine the research.
And I know we're looking forward to that. One second.
Yeah, Eduardo? Yeah, and I also wanted to thank you for this presentation because it's extremely useful not only for people that is not familiar with the Colombian conflict, but also for us who know what's happening here in the country.
Okay, thank you so much for your comment, for your kind comment, and thank you so much for your previous question and your previous observation.
Under the question section, Lucas said that it was brilliant, and it looks like you really enjoyed it.
Okay, wow, amazing. I'm very pleased to hear that.
All right. Thank you again, Eduardo. And everyone, thank you for joining us today.
No.
On November 16th, we will hear from Paul Quinn on negotiation in water conflicts, getting to agreement.
Okay. Thank you so much, Caleb, for all your help, and thank you for everybody who show up for the webinar.